in free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It's Thursday, May 22nd, 2014. We're talking to Jeff Berwick of the Dollar Vigilante today. Before we get to Jeff, finally, the stars are aligned. All obstacles have been overcome, and I finally can direct you to the free ebook that I have been promising. This ebook is a collection of transcripts of all the interviews done on this show in 2013. And when you look at it, you look at the table of contents, you flip through it, so to speak, you find that it's like a primer on liberty. It's got so many topics in there, covered in some depth with a lot of great information and arguments you can use. It's just great. And it costs you nothing. Nothing. Not one thing. I mean, if you want to mail me a check for $1 million, you're free to do that, but you don't have to. You can just read the book. How do you get it? That's the question. Like, what are you listening to me for? Go get this book. All right, first I have to tell you how to do it, though. You have to go to tomwoods.com. That's my site, tomwoods.com/ebook. Ebook is spelled just the way it sounds, E-B-O-O-K. tomwoods.com/ebook. Type in exactly what I just said to you. tomwoods.com/ebook, and you'll have it. There it is. Fantastic. It's big. It's something you can read on the plane. You can read at home. You can read anywhere. You can enjoy in little chunks. You can read one interview at a time. You don't have to read it in order. You can read it in the bathroom. It's great. And it costs you nothing. Nothing at all. But it's my thanks to you guys for being loyal listeners of the program. So tomwoods.com/ebook is your assignment. I'm going to remind you after I talk to Jeff Berwick. You got to go do this. But let's talk now to Jeff Berwick. Who is he? Jeff Berwick is the founder and editor of The Dollar Vigilante, which is a free market financial newsletter which focuses on all aspects of the ongoing financial fiasco out there, and gives you advice on investments for safety and profit during these difficult times. He also hosts the popular YouTube channel Anarchast. Check out the Dollar Vigilante at dollarvigilante.com. Jeff Berwick, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, Tom. Big fan of yours, so thank you for having me on.
Well, likewise, we have a lot to talk about, your being the Dollar Vigilante and all, but I want to talk about a very recent piece of yours talking about the end of the drug war, talking about marijuana legalization, and showing how international it is. I didn't realize that. I tend to be U.S.-centric, and I was thinking that the whole story is contained within Washington and Colorado, but you show that it goes well beyond that.
Yes, absolutely, and I'm so thrilled to see what I think is the end of the drug war happening right now. I think the drug war was one of the most heinous times in human history. And, of course, it has enabled so much of this status control. As you know, when people go through airports, they're going through all their bags and everything. And if you ask the TSA goons at the airport what they're looking for, they usually tell you, oh, we've got to look for drugs. And you cross borders, same thing. And cops pulling people over all over the U.S. and checking them because they might have plants in their car called marijuana. And so this has been just a horrible thing for human beings. And as you pointed out, it's not just U.S.-centric, although this movement did start in the U.S., which was really great to see. Actually, a friend of mine named Joby Weeks started it. He was in Colorado a couple of years ago, and he just decided he had enough of this and went out and asked people to sign a petition to bring a marijuana decriminalization bill towards to be voted on. And a year later, it actually got done. And since Colorado has fully legalized recreational marijuana, we've seen all over the world people governments and people saying this is enough of all of this. They've all been doing it mostly because of the U.S. influence for whatever reason. And yes, we're seeing it all over. Uruguay has completely decriminalized marijuana now. We're seeing it in Argentina, Switzerland, Brazil, Mexico. Of course, in Mexico, not many people know this, but all drugs are legal for personal possession in Mexico. But they're starting to move towards decriminalization of anything to do with marijuana. And I think marijuana is going to be the start. And yes, it's a global movement, and it's not going away. And I think this is incredibly exciting times for both liberty and in terms of investment, because for the first time in a long time, we can actually invest in this giant business. It's a huge billion-dollar business that's been underground, and that's what's caused all the problems, just like alcohol prohibition in the 30s. Whenever you try to make something illegal and you have these governments, it drives things underground, and there's no dispute resolution, so there's a lot of people just getting killed and shot, and in Mexico, where I am right now, beheaded and things like that. But it was very amazing for me. I was just in Cayman Islands about a week ago at a meeting for a large cannabis production company, and there was about 60 mostly senior citizen, older sort of people there, all with their reading glasses on and all asking questions about exactly which strain of marijuana this company would be growing and which one's the most popular. And it was just amazing for me to see, because of course a few years ago having a meeting like that would be highly illegal. It'd be, if it was caught by the authorities, the so-called authorities, a lot of those people would be in jail. But now that it's becoming decriminalized, it's just becoming a normal business. And it's fascinating and exciting, and I think the profit potential is going to be amazing for people who get into it. But even more than that, more important to me is liberty, because this will really show a lot of people. It's like, why did we have all these borders and governments and checking us at the airports and things like that if drugs are now legal?
You know, originally in the, I guess it was the 1930s that marijuana was first criminalized. And that, by the way, is interesting to a lot of people, I think, because we're so used to the drug war that I think we assume that all these substances were always illegal, but they weren't. This is actually not that long ago. I mean, there are people living today who were alive before the whole thing happened. But on the marijuana question, they pushed through the so-called Marijuana Tax Act of 1937 amidst propaganda hysteria coming out of the U.S. Congress about the dangers of this substance. And then 7 years later, they sheepishly admitted that, okay, none of that's true. But that didn't cause them to lift the ban. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, the history of marijuana, especially in the U.S., is fascinating. And not many people know this, of course, because in the public indoctrination camps, the government schools, they don't tell them anything about any of this. But people like George Washington were hemp growers. They grew marijuana, mostly for cannabis and mostly for hemp to make things like clothes and things like that. And actually, the cannabis crop, the hemp crop is an amazing crop that has so many uses. And so what happened, as you pointed out, around the 1930s is, as usual within the U.S., it's very fascistic, and the big monopolies work with the government to try to crowd out everyone else and create rules and laws so that people can't compete. And that's what they did back in the 20s and 30s. Back in the 1910 or 1920, on the back of a $10 bill was a image of a hemp farmer. And it was very normal. You'd get your, of course, in the U.S., you need licenses for everything in the land of the free, but you would get your license to grow hemp. And then what happened was some of the industries, like the petrochemical and chemical industries, they'd come up with all these ways to make clothes and all that sort of stuff. But the hemp industry was way more, made a lot more sense. It was a lot cheaper. It was easier to grow the crops. It made better quality substances. So they tried to make it illegal, and they tried to say all kinds of things about how dangerous it was. And it was really ridiculous. And of course, still to this day, the mainstream prostitutes, media, prostitutes, I call them, are still trying to say these things about marijuana. But if you look at the actual marijuana usage and the amount of deaths attributed to marijuana, tobacco, for example, there was 400,000 plus deaths in the U.S. from tobacco, 300,000 plus from poor diet and exercise. Alcohol, 85,000, prescription drugs, 32,000, even aspirin, 7,000, peanuts, 100. Marijuana caused zero deaths in the U.S. And actually, just recently, I just saw it today in Colorado, there was a stat that I believe they said that the murder rate is down by about half since marijuana was decriminalized on January 1st of this year.
I'm looking right now at a graphic you have up at dollarvigilante.com that has a lot of those statistics that you just mentioned. Peanuts giving rise to 100 deaths a year, marijuana zero, and the caption is, marijuana, safer than peanuts, which is funny. But that leads to another question, which is, given that I think any reasonable person anyway can see that the propaganda against marijuana was based on nothing, and incidentally, I have no interest in using it or using any of these substances. It makes no difference to me. The point is I don't want other people being harassed, and I don't want it to be an excuse for the government to harass me or anybody else and to use it as a pretext. But anyway, having said that, the trouble will be that there are drugs, though, that are more dangerous, that actually we can attribute deaths to. And it's nice for us to say that the beginning of the end of the drug war is upon us, but I think you're going to have a much tougher row to hoe, so to speak, when it comes to some of these other drugs.
Yes, I agree. Definitely there are some other what they call drugs. Most of them are just plants, but what they call drugs. And then, of course, you have things like methamphetamines and all these things. But these things were actually caused by the drug war. Cocaine, for example, isn't all that dangerous at all. Alcohol is actually one of the most dangerous substances on Earth. It causes hundreds of thousands of deaths and who knows how many violent acts and things like that. But cocaine actually isn't that bad at all. It's mostly just like a caffeine or something like that. But what has happened is through the drug war, they made these things illegal. If they didn't, cocaine would be very cheap. It would be almost the same price as salt. And because of that, people have started using more and more really toxic chemicals. Of course, when you're using just the regular plant, which is natural, and it's always much better. Things like cocaine are derivative of the plant. Marijuana is the plant itself. But because they've become so expensive due to the drug war, and it's been harder to get them, and a lot of people are scared to be kidnapped and thrown into a cage if they're caught with a plant in their pocket, people have moved to more and more really crazy, dangerous chemical concoctions, such as methamphetamines, which is definitely very bad. But I think if what might happen here is as marijuana becomes legalized, people might start to see how great things are when it's legalized, the same way that people probably see the difference now between alcohol prohibition and when it's decriminalized, when it's legalized alcohol. And so we might see people just being more open to letting the free market actually be, because they're going to see a tremendous changes happening with this marijuana decriminalization around the world, and they're going to start to see that why are we even making anything illegal, making it so that people can't access things that they just want to put into their own bodies, which is, of course, nothing to do with freedom. And it might start a movement. There's definitely no way to know where this is going, but it's definitely moving in the right direction. And I commented that it's so nice to see this drug war come to such a just a total funny end to it. With all of a sudden, just in a matter of months, all this stuff that you have millions of people in jail in the U.S. for having plant possession. You have people still getting their doors knocked down by SWAT teams in the U.S. looking for these plants while they're being basically decriminalized all over the place. It's just come to just an obvious. Such an obvious and amazing end, and I think it'll really awaken people to just what exactly do we need government for, or do we need it at all? I call it, of course, an unnecessary evil, and the more things that we can get the government out of, the better it is for everybody.
Jeff, I'd like to ask you a personal question, if I may. You're free to decline to answer, but how long ago did you move to Mexico, and what made you decide to do that?
I answer all questions. I'm not a politician. I will respond to any question anyone wants to ask me. I started something called the Dollar Vigilante in around 2009, but before that, I decided that I had enough of, I'm originally from Canada, so I'd moved out of Canada. I'd had enough of the socialism and taxes and regulation and just the general culture where a lot of people thought those were really great things. And I decided to live something called a permanent tourist or a prior taxpayer type lifestyle. And so I've lived all over the world since then. I've been to about 100 countries. I've lived in Hong Kong, Thailand, all over the place, Mexico. I'm actually not a resident of Mexico. I stay here as a tourist because I live the permanent tourist lifestyle. So I'm never a resident in any place that I actually live. That way the government really has no control over me, and things like taxes don't apply to me as well, all legally. It's more difficult for Americans, and we could go into that if you'd like. But for most people around the world, for me, from Canada, if I don't live in Canada, I'm a resident of another country that doesn't have any taxes that apply to me, I don't have to pay taxes anymore in Canada. So I really don't have to pay any taxes due to this lifestyle I live in. The main reason I moved to Mexico was about 5 years ago. I just loved it here. I've been to about 100 countries. It's one of the freest countries on earth. It's obviously not totally free. There is a government here, but most people just ignore the government. It's a lot better. And I think that's a part of the reason that the U.S. has continually tries to demonize Mexico is because they don't want people to know that the land of the free in North America is not in the U.S. and it's just a short drive or flight south to Mexico. And so they try to always make it look as bad as possible. But I think it's just much better here in almost every way. I feel it's much safer here. Definitely not being kidnapped by people in blue costumes all the time here. And I'm not getting extorted every year for half of my income called taxes. It's definitely a lot safer in Mexico and a lot freer.
Given how extensive your world travel has been, I wonder, has that travel and your experiences around the world, has that reaffirmed your political views or challenged them in any way?
Well, it's kind of funny because when I first left Canada and decided to travel around the world, I didn't really have any political views. I really just didn't understand what was going on, and that's why I decided to leave. And I actually bought a sailboat, and I was trying to sail around the world, and I ended up sinking in El Salvador. But I kept going by backpack, train, plane, and automobile for about 5 or 6 years and went to about 100 countries. And the whole purpose of that was I was not getting a real view of what the world was in Canada from the government propaganda channel, CBC, and their nightly news. I knew I wasn't getting the full story, so I decided to go see the world for myself. And what I discovered during those years, and this is still to this day what I'm doing and what I'm living, is I've discovered that governments around the world are the biggest problem to any country, every single country. And as you see how different countries work, for example, I was just in Cuba. And so when you get the chance to see how things work under these different government systems, it really starts to make you realize that in every single country you go to, the biggest issue, the biggest problem that is causing problems in that country is the government itself and all of the things it does. And the more freer countries, and I would say freer countries that I've been to would be places like Cambodia, very free right now. It almost has no government. You really don't see any police, and it's booming. It's almost turning into the next Thailand and quite possibly in 10 or 20 years, the next Hong Kong. Places like Mexico are quite free. It's definitely not totally free, but it's so much freer that the economy is booming here. Not many people know this, but the Mexican stock exchange is up about 400% in the last decade. A lot of the economy is booming here. There's actually more Mexicans leaving the U.S. now than going there. But of course, you don't hear that on the propaganda, on the mainstream media. We keep telling people that the people from Mexico are coming here to take our jobs. And it's just all propaganda. In actuality, I meet so many Mexicans who used to live in the U.S. who have now moved back here, and they always give me the exact same two reasons. They say, first of all, the economy is atrocious in the U.S., and it's so much better in Mexico. And secondly, there's just no freedom in the U.S., and it's so much freer in Mexico.
Jeff, let me read for people the tagline at dollarvigilante.com, surviving and prospering during and after the dollar collapse. First, I have two questions. I'll just ask them one at a time. The first one is, if you were to talk to Paul Krugman and say and use the words dollar collapse, he would just laugh in your face and say, of all things to be worried about at a time when inflation of consumer prices seems to be so low, we have a lot of problems, but for heaven's sake, you're worried about a dollar collapse? That's just not going to happen. What would you say to him?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure I would even talk to him. I don't talk to insane people because I find it just wastes my time, and they're just saying babble.
For the sake of argument.
Okay, if I were to talk to him, of course he'd be telling me all his plans for saving the economy, like his plan he came up with last year of faking an alien invasion to boost the economy. And then he had his other idea to make a $1 trillion coin out. You know, he's obviously insane, and I can't believe that anyone even pays attention to him. He even looks like a homeless man. I'm not sure. He probably is someone off the street they just brought on to talk on the New York Times and try to tell people things. But yes, he would say things like that to me, and if I did take him seriously, I would just respond that if you look at the actual situation, you look at the financial situation of the U.S., the dollar is already, it's a foregone conclusion, it will collapse. The U.S. government or the dollar or both will collapse in the next 5 to 10 years. There's $17 trillion worth of U.S. government debt right now. That doesn't include any of their liabilities, things like socialist insecurity, Medicare, Medicaid, and all those things. And all that money's already been spent. It's already been stolen and spent. The total amount of debt and liabilities of the U.S. government is over 80 trillion. Some people say as high as 200 trillion, but even at 80, actually it's over 90 trillion by my calculations right now. That works out to about $250,000 per person, man, woman, and child in the U.S. So a family of four has over $1 million of federal government debt and liabilities overhanging it. So this is not going to get paid off, especially when 80% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck right now. The economy has been hollowed out and destroyed by the U.S. government and the Federal Reserve. There's no chance of paying it back. And even if you take the $17 trillion of just debt alone, not including liabilities, if interest rates were to rise to, say, 10%, which is not a massive level at all, of course, during the 1970s, they rose to as high as 18%, and things were much better back then, believe it or not, than they are today. So if interest rates even rose to 10%, that on $17 trillion worth of debt, that'd be $1.7 trillion worth of interest payments alone, and that's almost the entire budget of the U.S. government in their tax extortion theft revenue base that they do. So it would immediately make the U.S. government insolvent. So this thing's already over. It's baked in the cake. People like Paul Krugman are mostly just clowns. They parade out there to try to fool people to think that things are still okay while they steal the last remaining money from the last remaining people who have money in the U.S.
I'm looking at your website right now, and I think it's very attractive. I think it's one of the most attractive sites I've seen in some time. Why do people want to visit this site? What do you get? What are you guys producing on a daily basis that benefits people?
Well, the Dollar Vigilante started as my realization after studying Austrian economics for about 5 to 10 years that the entire financial system and monetary system of the world was unsustainable and is on the verge of collapse. And I started it after 2008 because that was the first wave of this collapse. So it really became obvious to me that this has begun now. People like George Soros said in 2009 that the financial system did collapse, and all they're doing now is printing money to make it seem like it's still alive, and that's exactly the case. And I rarely agree with George Soros, but I do agree with him on that point. And so I started the Dollar Vigilante to awaken people and try to get them information on the truth about what's going on, because if you watch CNBC or any of the mainstream media, you're just going to hear all the usual propaganda things like there's green shoots or it's a Goldilocks recovery. I like that one because it is really a fairy tale recovery, but it's the furthest thing from the truth. There's a lot going on, and most people in the U.S. just don't even hear about it or see it on the mainstream media, and that's why it's so great to have people like yourself, Tom, and so many others, and people at Lou Rockwell and Mises Institute putting out real information. For the first time ever, really, since the Internet, people actually have access to real information. So the Dollar Vigilante is mostly what started to awaken people to how to protect themselves and actually profit from it during the collapse of the dollar, and actually have four B's that I've been talking about. I just added the last B just recently, but the first three B's to survive and that prosper were bullion in terms of gold bullion, bullets, both as an investment and as protection during what might be coming ahead in the complete societal collapse in the U.S., and Bitcoin, which, of course, is fairly new, and I think that's a great way to move beyond this monetary system, and as well, it's been a great speculation. We got into it around $7. It's currently $450. And then I just added the most recent one just recently, marijuana, bud. So those are the four Bs, and I think the marijuana industry is an amazing investment opportunity, and that's that's something I'm going to be focusing on. So, yeah, these are all the sort of things that have evolved from this initial concept of trying to awaken people to the dire financial situation that's going on. And now we talk about so many ways to internationalize yourself, get foreign passports, expatriate from the U.S. I think it's going to be ground zero for this economic collapse. And it's going to be dangerous and not very comfortable for a lot of people. And as I mentioned earlier, I've traveled the world, so I've seen that so many other countries have so much more freedom, better economies, and it's just a better place to be for the coming years. And the two areas I focus most on and I like the most are Asia and Latin America.
The website is dollarvigilante.com. Jeff, you're a very, very interesting guy. I think you're uniquely poised to be able to give people good advice, given your experience around the world. And we're grateful for your time today. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
Okay, everybody, make sure you check out dollarvigilante.com and that you also check out tomwoods.com/ebook. This is not hosted on the Tom Woods Radio page. It's on which is really a page on Peter Schiff's site, really. But it's on my own personal site, tomwoods.com/ebook. And you can get it for your Kindle. You can get it for your Nook. You can get it as a PDF. All three formats are available there to make you happy. It would make me happy if you would read this book or download it and read it at some point. That would make me very happy. Remember, June 2nd, I'm speaking in Boston. June 19th, speaking in St. Paul, Minnesota, and August 15th in Nashville, Tennessee. Get the details on those events at tomwoods.com. On the events page, tomwoods.com/events. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you tomorrow.
The Tom Woods Show.